in the presence of God and before this congregation, Harry and Meghan have given their consent and made their marriage vows to each other. They have declared their marriage by the joining of hands and by the giving and receiving of rings. I therefore proclaim that they are husband and wife.
And the crowd goes wild. The romance, the beauty, the hats, and the sense that people are seeing history in the making. History may not be everyone's cup of tea, but events like the royal wedding make it come alive for the masses, and so, at least for some of the masses, do podcasts. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman, and today on KCUR Central Standard, it's our semi-annual celebration and roundup of the world of podcasting, our Audiophiles episode. Later in the show, we'll have that roundtable of thoughts on what's new and interesting to accompany your commute or workout or household chores. But we're beginning with the producer and host of one of those podcasts that's super interesting, Beckett Graham. She's producer and co-host of the History Chicks. Beckett, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
You were chuckling over there.
Oh, well, it's just been such a weekend. I'm still suffering from sleep deprivation,
I know. We're also just beside ourselves about the wedding. I should say you are most recently working on another podcast called The Recappery, which, among other things, is taking apart the latest season of The Crown from Netflix, which is all about the British royal family, which makes me wonder, what did you think of the wedding?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Like I said, I'm still suffering the effects of having set my alarm, gotten up. I must admit I didn't get dressed. My co-host on the History Chicks had a grand adventure where she drank elderflower cocktails to match the wedding cake, and everybody wore their jammies and fascinators. I myself did not do so. I stayed on the couch and opened up a thread in my Facebook group. And 2,500 comments later,
wow!
Everyone that was also alone was very grateful to have had the group to talk to.
So it was bringing people together.
Oh my goodness, from all over the world.
Yeah, which I think was true on Twitter, certainly. There was a lot of, it did feel like a world-uniting sort of experience.
Yeah, it was just glorious.
Well, so analyze this then as the history nerd that you are, and I hope you don't mind my using such a term. How big a deal was this wedding?
It was a very big deal. I heard a commentator on the BBC saying that this sort of event is how a people expresses their identity to the world. And it's, sometimes adversity brings a country together. And luckily this time it was the opposite of adversity that brought the country together. Something to cheer for, to root for, to wave the little flag and cheer and just want to be a part of the experience, whether at home, far, far away, or if you were one of the lucky ones that got to take the close-up photo as the carriage drove by you.
Yeah, I mean, why do you think the worldwide fascination with the events of a royal family of a country, which is pretty small in population compared to the number of people who are watching?
It has been throughout history, of course, for worse or better. The sun never set on the British Empire at one point, and we can certainly argue that that is not a good thing. However, it is mixed into the history of so much of the world that there is a certain fascination.
Obviously, a lot of the historical significance of this wedding was related to the bride and to Meghan Markle in particular. How big a deal is her introduction into British aristocracy?
I think that is a very, very big deal. She brought a level of inclusion into that family and just the institution in general. The institution had been having a problem about meshing up with the modern world. And you can see that in The Crown, how, changes are happening outside and we're still in our little world. Well, this is just another example of the giant step forward that they are taking to kind of be at one with the world in general.
Yeah, I mean, that is sort of the central conceit of the TV show, The Crown, right? It's that conflict between, quote-unquote, real life and the life of the royal family. Mm-hmm. And here it does feel like there was a real a coming together.
I thought it was a great testament to Princess Diana that her son made his wedding more about the people I mean, of course, there was a little bit of himself in there, too. It's his wedding. But he gave so much of it back to the people in his inclusion of the charity workers and the people that were allowed to come closer. And he went out unscheduled with his brother and just shook hands for hours outside of the gates. He didn't have to do that. And I just think it makes people love him even more, if that's possible.
You know, I'm thinking about Meghan Markle and her place in history, or I should say the Duchess of Sussex.
Oh, yes. It's hard to say.
Duchess of Sussex. I practiced. You know, you've studied and done podcasts about a lot of famous women in history. That's what your podcast is about.
Correct.
Where does she fit in to that lineup?
She is not, as some have said, the first person of color to have occupied a space in the royal family, in theory. We can go as far back as 1328, in fact, to Philippa of Hainaut, the wife of King Edward III, who had Moorish ancestors. She came from Belgium, which was a country called the Low Countries at the time, that was ruled by the Moors. And there's no actual portraits of her. So that remains in the midst of history. But moving forward and more pertinent to American history, remember that king that we wrote the bad breakup letter to? George III.
Yes.
His wife, Charlotte of Mecklenburg, is descended six separate ways. This is a pretty tight gene pool.
Yeah.
From a Portuguese king and maybe his African mistress named Morana Gill. She's the grandmother of Queen Victoria. So that comes a lot closer to the modern day.
And while that is a historical fact, one would not exactly put that in the list of great celebrations of African or African-American culture, for that matter, like we saw this weekend.
Oh, no. My goodness. Was that just amazing? I loved every second of it. I loved every second of it, from the wedding guests themselves to the musical performers. The cellist blew me away. I could not believe he was only 19 years old.
And a British man of,
yes.
Of African descent.
Yes. The gospel choir, it was just such a nice mix of cultures there, I think.
The preaching, of course. And I was going to ask you if you have thoughts about the preaching. There were some negative feedback, it seems, that from some Britons who, particularly to the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in America, Michael Curry, who delivered perhaps a lengthier homily than they were accustomed to, although it was only about 13 minutes, which is not lengthier than a lot of sermons I know. But
well, there seems to be some kind of formula to the Anglican service, which was being put to the side a little during this speech. And I can see, if you're not quite prepared for it, how it's going to be a little unnerving for you. If you're expecting this, then this happens, and then this, and we've known this since birth, and all of a sudden something happens that derails the whole process, and it takes you a while, maybe even till the next wedding, to get to terms with it.
I don't know that you've researched this specific question, but can't imagine there were any other Americans who have ever preached at a royal wedding before.
I have not researched specifically, but I would be remiss if I didn't state that during the Gilded Age, from 1880 to about 1910, hundreds of rich American women married into the British aristocracy, and they usually did so in New York City. So I would guess there have been many American preachers that have preached to members of the aristocracy, but not perhaps in a cathedral setting in Europe.
Yeah, not in a royal wedding.
Correct.
That makes me think about Lady Grantham in the fictional royalty in Downton Abbey, who is an American woman married to British lord.
Correct. That's it. I will tell you, Julian Fellowes read the same book that I read to start his project. So I have illustrious cousins.
Indeed. All this talk about Meghan, you know, Harry was there, too. I mean, as we're getting to know Prince Harry, what do you think of him historically? How is he going to make a mark, or is he?
Well, he has had a checkered past, shall we say, and the second in line to the throne, the spare, always has that sort of role. And, you know, as medicine gets better, you're not typically going to be called upon to step in for your older brother in a way that you might have in the past.
Right.
And so his role has always been kind of a party type of role. As he has grown and matured, his role as a patron of assorted charities, I think, is what is going to get him his mark in history.
Mm. And he's already starting to make a mark there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do want to ask you, Beckett, about your latest project, this The Recappery, which is a spinoff of your very successful History Chicks podcast.
Thank you.
What is The Recappery?
In The Recappery, we take the concept that we had during the History Chicks of combining pop culture and history, and we really take it up a notch, and we annotate movies and television shows of historical interest. We have covered, as you mentioned, The Crown. We've covered Anne with an E, which is a retelling of Anne of Green Gables. We are currently covering the PBS production of Little Women.
Wow. And so you do have a thing for this same group of literary classics there. Well, I don't know if The Crown is a literary classic, but you're recapping The Crown. You started with season 2. Why?
Because we hadn't yet thought of The Recappery. It's a simple fact of me not having a time machine, unfortunately.
But you will go back?
According to the listeners, we ought to go back. So we probably will.
Okay, well, count me as a listener who thinks you should go back and do season 1. Let's listen to a little bit of The Recappery, this recap of The Crown, season 2. And this is from your second episode. You're describing a scene from the Thursday Lunch Club, this sort of raucous men's club that Prince Philip is part of, where a gentleman is standing up and is reading a letter that purports to be from Mike, the prince's friend and personal assistant, describing what has happened on his royal trip and around the world. And it sounds like maybe it was a little inappropriate. Here's how you and your co-host, Susan Vollenweider, deal with that scene.
The Thursday Club reader, I believe, is supposed to be based on a man who was called Baron. His name is Sterling Henry Nahum, N-A-H-U-M. He was a real founding member of the Thursday Club. He was a court photographer. Because at the end, he puts the letter down on the table, and we have a close-up of the letter, and you can see his address on there. I do want to put a little reality in here, because according to the timeline, Baron had died the previous September. We're at Christmas time, so he had really been dead for a while. So that's just a little mistake of history there.
And just a tiny little obstacle to him reading letters, Susan. Come on.
That's a little piece of The Recappery, talking about the second season of The Crown. Beckett Graham, how historically accurate do you find The Crown to be in general?
There are a lot of times that The Crown takes apart history and puts it back together out of order for the purposes of a story arc. And I understand it's a different medium, so I actually don't mind those so much. However, I wish that people would know the real story either before or after. So that's why we're doing this.
So you do care whether it's historically accurate?
I do care, and I understand why. Both. Yeah.
So I, before we bring in the rest of our audio files to talk about podcasts, yours focuses on history. Why? Does podcasting lend itself to history in a particular way?
I think podcasting lends itself to storytelling, more specifically. And history to us at the History Chicks is nothing more than telling the story of a human being who just happened to live in a different time and circumstances from us. People are people, no matter when they lived.
That's Beckett Graham. She is the co-host and producer of The History Chicks and also the spinoff, The Recappery. We're going to take a break. KCUR Central Standard will continue in just a minute. We're talking with Beckett, one of podcasting's History Chicks. We'll keep doing that, and she'll be joined by two of KCUR's own podcast aficionados. Our audio files are here when we come back. It's KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison, in for Gina Kaufman. We're talking today about podcasts with our audiophiles, our in-house and guest experts on the best stuff out there for your ears, available for download and subscription. We know you listen every single week to Midwestern-ish, hosted by Gina Kaufman, and Statehouse Blend Missouri, hosted by me, and the other fine podcast productions from KCUR Studios, but what else should you be listening to? To help us find out, still with us is Beckett Graham. She's co-host and producer of the History Chicks podcast. Welcome back, Beckett.
Thank you.
KCUR's Madeline Fox, whose work you can sometimes catch as part of the Statehouse Blend Kansas podcast.
And that's true.
Other good stuff from Kansas News Service, where she's a reporter. Hi, Maddie.
Hi.
And Cody Newell of KCUR, now part of our audience engagement team and the co-host of our KCUR's Question Quest podcast. Welcome, Cody.
Hey, how's the thank? Thank you for having me. I got caught off guard there.
Well, you know, I like to surprise people. So this show is about our favorites. What is great in podcasts? They can be new ones from the past year. They can be podcasts that have gotten better recently. We want to hear from you. What are some of your favorites? Call 816-235-2888 to let us know. That's 235-2888. You can also tweet at us. We're at KCURCST. And we did talk in the first part of the show about shows from which you might learn something, history especially. But one of the things I've noticed is that a lot of podcasts are trying to teach you something in an interesting way. Each of you has shared a few of your thoughts on great podcasts, and each of you has at least one or two that explain or teach us something among your favorites. So let's dig right in. And Cody, I want to start with you. This is a podcast that isn't really new, but it's in a way always new because the material it covers is always changing. It's called Song Explorer. What is it?
Right. So Song Explorer is hosted by Hrishikesh Hirway, who is a musician and also, I think, a model and also a podcaster. He's also
most of us who make podcasts are also models.
Right,
Cody,
right.
So that's normal.
It's a real through line with podcasting. Yeah. He's also the host or one of the co-hosts of the West Wing Weekly, if you are into The West Wing or ever watched The West Wing.
Oh, I am.
And that's a great podcast. It's really, really great. But this podcast, he sits down with a musician, an artist, and really just like digs in deep to one of their songs, like goes through the entire production of it, the writing. He'll take individual tracks, like they get access to the individual tracks they recorded for the song and play them back individually to really like explore, like, okay, what were you thinking with like this bass line, or what were you thinking with this particular line? And I really just love it because I feel like I get this really deep look into it. Even if I'm not into the music artists themselves, mm-hmm. I still like just listening to them talk about their process. Like that's super interesting to me.
Do you feel like you have to be kind of a music nerd to appreciate it, or is this something that anybody could get something out of?
I don't think so. And in fact, I think it would interest you either way. I think you'd be like, wow, I didn't know that this was so involved. Like if you didn't, I don't know that much about audio production. I mean, I work in radio, but I'm not like, you know, some audio engineer or mastering engineer. But I get a lot out of it on that level, too, of knowing a little bit more about audio. But I don't think you'd need to know a whole lot to really enjoy it.
Well, we're going to listen to a little bit of Song Exploder. What is this episode we're going to hear?
So this clip is from an episode where Hrishikesh talked with Kimbra, pop artist, and she's talking about her song Top of the World.
All right, let's take a listen.
The start of the song happened at Skrillex Studio. We met backstage at Coachella, and then, you know, we talked about hanging out because we were both living in the same part of town in LA. He invited me over to his studio, and we were just like listening to beats together. I was playing him some of my demos. He was playing me things he had, and pulls up this beat. This almost seance-like trance beat. I'm like, yo, this is really sick. And I started, you know, just moving along to it. And I guess I just started singing along. Wah, 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 wah. Just kind of made this noise in my mouth, like a kind of low, I guess, almost didgeridoo or something, you know, quite textural. And he's like, that's sick. Let's record it. The beauty of Skrillex working with him is he's so fast and he just presses record and I'm singing it into the mic of the computer. We start layering it. At that point, I wasn't really thinking about what the song would be about or even if it would be for me. I mean, a lot of the time when you're writing, especially with DJs, you don't know where that stuff's going to end up. So it didn't get very far in terms of arrangement that day. We decided to kind of sit on it for a bit. He had it on his computer, so he pulled it up with a bunch of people who were coming through his studio. I remember him texting me being like, yo, Anderson .Paak really digs it. Like, he's going to put something down, and I'm with Vic Mensa, and he's going to try something. And I was like, oh, that's dope. Like, just I love that idea of making something and then just letting it kind of go out into the universe and see where it flies.
That Song Exploder, the podcast from Hrishikesh Hirway and that takes apart music. Cody, what are some of the other episodes of that? If folks are just going to check out the... for check out one or two, see if they like it. Any others you think they should go to?
Well, I would say if you just look at the list of like episodes and you see someone you recognize, like an artist that you recognize and like, then that's probably the best point to start at, because then you'll know the song. But for me, one of my favorite bands is Fleet Foxes, and they had Robin Pecknold of Fleet Foxes on there talking about a song called Mayark Stapa. And the way that they talked about that and the way that they broke that song apart and really talked about each aspect was super impressive. And they once again, like, breaking these songs apart into the individual tracks is just so exciting for me personally to like hear those things, because you don't get that access any other way, really, unless you're in the recording studio.
All right, so that's Song Exploder. If you're into music, we had another suggestion on Facebook from a listener named Travis, who suggests one called Hit Parade with Chris Molanfi. I don't know this one, but he's a music charts writer and does a deep dive on a particular chart phenomenon each episode. So in one, he compares Tom Petty and Prince. In another, he talks about the war against the single. So you can check out that one, too. Madeline Fox, we move from learning a little something about music to learning something about our economy. Tell us about The Uncertain Hour.
I would love to. So The Uncertain Hour comes out of Marketplace, and their shtick, so to speak, is getting into really thorny issues very relatably. Their first season was on welfare, just sort of getting into the history of it and how it got to where it is today, with some fantastic archival sound. They found this whole album of songs about how welfare is a temporary way of life that they threw into the podcast last season, and that was very entertaining. And then this season, which just wrapped up a few months ago, I want to say, they got into regulations, which, again, a very thorny issue that sounds really dull, but they really bring it to life.
So we're going to hear a little bit of The Uncertain Hour. Is there anything we know about this particular clip?
So this season started off with this particular case of the regulation of peanut butter. I think that should set it up pretty well, but yeah.
All right, let's take a listen to The Uncertain Hour.
It was 1959, and Ruth Desmond, the gurney-climbing, cook-from-scratch co-founder of the Federation of Homemakers and future peanut butter grandma, was prowling the halls of her new favorite bureaucracy, the Food and Drug Administration. And she stumbled on this unassuming but ultimately history-changing government notice. These four little paragraphs typed up and sitting on an FDA desk, this proposal to regulate peanut butter. To most of us, the notice would look like a bunch of bureaucratic mumbo-jumbo, but not to Ruth Desmond. I actually have a copy of it here. It starts with this catchy title, Peanut Butter, semicolon, because bureaucracies love them some semicolons. Peanut Butter, Notice of Proposal to Establish Definition and Standard of Identity. Then there's a bit about how the FDA is developing this proposed peanut butter standard, quote, pursuant to the authority of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, sections 401, 701, and 52, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then we get to the heart of the matter. I'll translate this part a bit. Basically, the FDA was proposing that in order for something to be called peanut butter, it should be made mostly of, drum roll, peanuts. But the proposal went further, drew a line in the sand. Peanut butter, this FDA notice suggested, should specifically be made of no less than 95% peanuts. Remember that number, 95%.
95% peanuts.
More chuckling than I usually do about peanut butter, man.
Yeah, and regulations, I'd imagine.
Indeed. What other things does this podcast take on? And is this, again, is this something that someone really has to care about those topics, or does this make you care about the topic?
I think it does a really good job of making you care. And actually, very relevantly, the season on regulations also got into some of the opioid crisis and the regulations, or sort of lack thereof, that got us to where we are, just in terms of the way that stuff could be prescribed. So,
which may be more important to some listeners than the makeup of the peanut butter.
Yes, absolutely.
And peanut butter's fundamental identity, as that, yes. as that said. Well, Beckett Graham, you know, obviously your history podcast is all about learning stuff, but I love one of the suggestions you've made about a podcast that people can learn about on animation. Tell us about Drawn.
Drawn, the story of animation, is a really very new podcast that it's hard to explain how well this works in an audio medium when it is a visual thing they're talking about.
Right.
But it really, really does. They go into, it's basically a combination of Song Exploder and how this got made. They go back into the history of, say, the origins of Bugs Bunny, how he became who he is today, the different people that played his voices, his historical relevance. They have a lot of guests on that can tell his story from different angles.
So we're going to hear a little bit of the episode about Bugs Bunny. Is there anything we need to know about where we've been?
Well, I'm the child of symphony musicians, so this explains how my whole generation knows Wagner as Kill the Wabbit.
Let's listen to Drawn, the Story of Animation.
Most Bugs fans, when you ask what their favorite Bugs Bunny cartoons are, will mention two in particular. The Rabbit of Seville.
How about a nice close-shaved teacher, whiskers to behave, lots of leather, lots of soap, please hold still, don't be a dope. Now we're ready for the scraping, there's no use to try escaping, yell and scream and rant and rave, it's no use, you need a shave.
And what's Opera Doc?
Kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit, kill the wabbit.
Kill the wabbit?
Both of these shorts, directed by Chuck Jones, set the adversarial relationship between Bugs and Elmer on a backdrop of opera. For adult viewers, this adds a fun layer of sophistication to things, but for kids, it's just all part of the rich world of sound and visuals that these characters find themselves in.
What have I done? I've killed the rabbit. Poor little bunny. Poor little wabbit.
I asked George if he's conscious of the fact that his Bugs Bunny at the symphony concerts might be the first time kids are hearing important pieces of classical music.
Well, I am and I'm not. You have to take it at face value. It's just like when I was a little kid in the living room floor watching it, I didn't know it was Wagner. I didn't know it was Rossini. I didn't know it was Franz Liszt. I just knew it was fantastic.
Well, that's I think that's pretty fantastic. Drawn, the Story of Animation. There's other episodes?
There are very minimal amounts of episodes. However, in their logo, never fear, parents of today, if your child doesn't know who Bugs Bunny is, the Saturday morning cartoon might not be, perhaps, you know, including of Warner Brothers cartoons
anymore.
That's
unthinkable to me that would be true of any child in America, but okay.
But in their logo, they feature characters from Adventure Time, yes, my favorite, the Powerpuff Girls, and Steven Universe. So never fear, I could only imagine those episodes are coming.
Let me ask all of you, do you feel like, I asked Beckett why she thinks podcasts work for history, and she's talked about telling stories. Some of these podcasts tell stories, some of them aren't exactly about stories, the makeup of a song or an exploration of peanut butter regulations, and yet somehow they all work. Is there something that makes podcasting work across the board?
I think there still is a story, though, you know, like I think that's the key, is that even though there may not be like a, you know, act one, act two, act three characters and whatnot, there still are characters and moments, and there's a narrative arc through, like, even like a Song Exploder episode. There's still an arc of like, oh, Kimbra sat down with Skrillex and then they started talking, and then, you know, it kind of develops over time. So I think narrative is still something that, even if it's not like, you know, really, really on the surface, it's still really important, I think.
Yeah, I would, to put on my radio reporter hat here, I think that there's when you can make things tangible to a listener, when you can really put them in a place or put them in a time or just somehow capture the scene for them, whether or not that's in formal storytelling or if it's just, hey, we were in the studio and we started playing this beat, it can really bring the reader in, along with you. So I think it is, I would agree, I think it is still storytelling for sure.
Another podcast that actually appeared on, the only one that appeared on two of your lists today, is one that I have not heard about before, but it's called The Habitat. And I'm going to ask maybe if Beckett, if you would tell us what The Habitat is about.
So there is a project, an ongoing project, whose acronym is HISEAS, which stands for Hawaii Space Exploration, Analog, and Simulation.
And this is a real thing.
This is a very real thing. Its intent, the problem, well, not the problem, but one of the major problems with going to Mars is once you get there, there you are. For a year, you cannot come back. The planets are not close enough for you to ever come back. So then you're left with people in a little place the size of a two-car garage for a year. That is what this simulation is trying to explore. What happens in, this is like real, real world. What happens when six people are trapped together for a year? Their real personalities might just come out.
Now, that does sound like the real world, except it's real. Maddie, why do you like this podcast?
Oh, I mean, it's something I hadn't heard about, honestly. And I was kind of, I mean, it's really odd and interesting and fun. And I don't know, the storytelling is really excellent. And the reporter gave audio recorders to the folks in this habitat. And so she's getting their audio diaries. I can't remember how, like week by week, I think she would get them back, possibly.
I think so. They were in there for an entire year, right, which is the longest anyone's ever been in one of the habitat projects.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like anything I would want anything to do with, but maybe the podcast would change my mind. We're going to listen to a little bit of this episode of The Habitat. Do we need to know anything before we hear it, Beckett?
I don't think so. I think we just need to start from the beginning.
All right, let's take a listen.
This dome is the habitat. It's a life-sized model of the thing astronauts could live in on Mars when we finally get there. It's white, it's about the size of a two-car garage, and it is the site of a really crazy experiment. See, the first people on Mars will be further from home than any person has ever been before. They'll be on a totally desolate planet with only each other for company. And they'll be crammed together in a glorified pup tent. That mixture of isolation and confinement, of being stuck so far from Earth and so close to each other, what does that do to a person? That's what this dome and this experiment are designed to find out. The experiment is called High Seas. It stands for Hawaii Space Exploration Analog and Simulation, and it was set up to help NASA test equipment for Mars. But the equipment being tested here isn't the rockets or the spacesuits. It's not even the habitat I'm standing in front of. High Seas was designed to test a far more critical piece of equipment: humans.
And that is a little taste of what you get by hearing The Habitat. Cody, you didn't put it on your list. What do you think?
Well, I think that's the kind of thing where when people say like, oh, we're going to be on different planets and we're going to be in space stations in the future, I say, well, I don't think I'm going to be. I think I'll be here because I think I'm good.
Exactly. Well, I feel the same way, but maybe our listeners don't. We want to know what you would want to hear a podcast about. What are you listening to? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. When we come back, we'll continue this discussion of top podcasts, including some that might just make us better humans and some that have no redeeming qualities at all. It's when KCUR Central Standard returns right after this. Welcome back to KCUR Central Standard. Our audiophiles are here with me. I'm Brian Ellison and for Gina Kaufman. They're recommending some of their favorite podcasts, and we want to hear yours too. Tell us what you're subscribing to these days, what you're downloading, and why. Call us at 816-235-2888. Joining me are Cody Newell and Madeline Fox and Beckett Graham, Beckett of the History Chicks, and they all are here with some of their suggestions, including one, Madeline, from you that gets to something that we've talked about before on this program. You do have something of a love for the True Crime Podcast.
I absolutely do. Well, and it's funny because this last time I was on, I think I recommended one or two True Crime Podcasts.
You did. In fact, I even went back to look to make sure you hadn't already recommended this one.
Right.
But this is a new one. Tell us about this new favorite.
So this is a parody. It's by The Onion, and it is a parody of True Crime Podcasts, and it is just phenomenal. I especially recommend it to fans of the true crime genre because you will recognize so many of the tropes, and I just die laughing when I listen to it.
Okay, so we are going to listen to a little bit of A Very Fatal Murder. Let's take a listen.
This is the Bluff Springs Police Department, front desk.
This is the Bluff Springs Police Department. It's been 10 years since Haley's murder, and it's hard to make a list of people who should have solved this case without including the police.
Yes, I'll connect you to his desk now.
You've reached Chief of Police David Pascal. Leave a message.
and that's me. A lot has changed since the last episode. It's 2018 now, a decade since I moved to Bluff Springs to make Haley Price's Unsolved Murder the centerpiece of a podcast that would change the landscape of journalism in the digital age. Now I'm no longer just a guest in Bluff Springs. I'm the one who keeps Bluff Springs safe. I'm the chief of police. That sound you keep hearing? Yeah, that's me, spinning the little circle part of my gun. When I first came here, I thought I would just be a fly on the wall, a selfless messenger who could make their simple, feudal customs and ways of life meaningful through my prose and perfect soothing radio voice. Maybe I'd even solve a murder or two. But the longer I was here, the more I realized I couldn't escape an undeniable truth. These people needed me, and maybe I needed them too, but they definitely needed me more. There was no way Haley's murder was getting solved without an experienced crime hunter like myself leading the chase. I had the gumption, brains, and audio recording equipment needed to solve this case. Without me, Haley's murderer would walk free. And not only would her family be broken forever, so would this town.
That is a very fatal murder, brought to you by The Onion. I'm glad you told us ahead of time it was a parody. I might have had to do a couple of double takes.
Yes, definitely.
I do feel like there is a sign there that podcasting in general and a particular genre of podcasting has really arrived, that we all recognize those elements and why they are so easy to send up.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. And I mean, it's there's so much like that in the whole podcast. I cannot recommend it enough.
I wonder if those of us who work in podcasts or in radio are particularly knowing in our laughter about
it. I would imagine so, yeah.
Well, from something so serious as that to the sublime, Cody, one of your picks is a very different kind of podcast, and one that I think will catch a lot of people off guard.
Yeah, so I think this is one of the best podcasts ever made. I'm just going to go ahead and say that, and I think it is a podcast for the year 2018 in a very specific way. This podcast is called Conversations with People Who Hate Me. It's hosted by Dylan Marin, who's a video maker and a person who really pushes for social justice online, and as such, he receives a lot of hate mail, a lot of hateful comments, a lot of just negativity towards his work. And he decided to kind of turn that negativity into a podcast and actually try to talk with the people who were, you know, saying really awful things online. And so every episode he gets somebody on and he asks them why they commented the way they did. And he's also started with a new kind of batch of episodes. He started moderating discussions between people who fought online. And I just feel like in the current political climate, in the current online age, this is like one of the best ideas for a podcast probably ever.
What do we need to know about the clip we're going to hear from this podcast?
I don't know if we need to know anything. Just kind of listen to it and take it in.
All right. Conversations with People Who Hate Me.
Hey, is this Doug?
This is.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So before we begin, in only as many details as you're comfortable sharing, tell me about you.
Well, my name is Doug, obviously. Mm-hmm. I am a server at a country club.
Oh, nice.
Yes. I'm trying to think.
Do you like the country club?
I do. I do like it. You know, it's something, until I really figure out what I'm doing with my life, it's something that really holds me down, and yeah. I enjoy it.
So, Doug, we are on this phone call because a few months ago, underneath the trailer for this very podcast, you wrote, "So you sort of openly embrace the fact that you're a talentless propaganda hack. That's cool."
That sounds like me, yeah.
Okay, great. So tell me why you wrote that.
Well, I've actually seen several of your videos pop up in my newsfeed mm-hmm. from time to time. Mm-hmm. And I just, on most of them diametrically, have an opposite belief as you do. So I just saw that advertisement and I just responded in such. Mm. Had no idea that it would actually catch your attention, that we'd be having this conversation right now, but here we are.
It's the podcast Conversations with People Who Hate Me. Cody Newell, do these always end well?
For the most part, all the ones that I've heard, and I haven't listened to every single one, but they do end pretty well. And I think the thing that I really love about it is just Dylan Maron's openness and his just willingness to say, like, hey, why'd you do this? And really his attempt to understand why people did the things they did usually ends up with them saying, like, well, now that I've talked to you, I actually don't feel like I probably shouldn't have done that. And mm-hmm. I don't feel the way I did whenever I made that comment, which is really, really heartening as someone who works in social media every day. It's really nice to hear these kinds of things.
And do you think that that's one of the things that we who work in sort of digital media or the audio world are still figuring out, this the way to bridge the distance between the listener and the producer of the product, or between the listeners themselves? I mean, you all get feedback on the work that you do from people who don't know you, and it isn't always positive.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes very hard to bridge that gap. And sometimes it's really, like, whenever you get a comment like that, it's very easy to just be like, well, I don't believe it, or, like, whatever, and dismiss it. But also, you know, feedback is really crucial to your work whenever you're doing podcasts or any sort of work, right?
Yeah. I mean, let me ask you, Beckett. I mean, you produce a very widely listened to podcast. Do you get responses? How do you interact with the people who take the initiative to interact with you?
We take a special pains to personally answer all of the social media and email that we get. We just feel like they're our friends or potential friends, and we need to take the time to understand where they're coming from. We sometimes do get negative responses, and we sort of just explain our position and leave it at that. We don't like to argue. We've done our research, and we just explain why we came to the conclusion that we did. And then everyone has to kind of absorb that and make their own decisions. So we don't take it too personally.
Another set of podcasts that I think have really kind of made their mark, and it's maybe History Chicks is in this category, but they're things that look to sort of set the record straight, fact-checking podcasts or things like The Weeds from mm-hmm. Vox that you know, you hear these topics and that really wants to dig into a topic. But one that I hadn't heard about, Beckett, that you brought up is one called Bad Science, that maybe a little more lighthearted approach, but still taking on some important things.
So, yes, I am sure that in our respective fields, say a chef watching a cook on TV, in my parents' case, symphony musicians watching an orchestra, you get a hold of a depiction that you just roll your eyes and you think, what, could they not hire a consultant? Well, in this show, they take apart the science in science fiction movies. And they started with Star Wars, which might be fightin' words.
Because mm-hmm. you don't attack Star Wars. Yeah. But they do. And let's take a little listen to some of their pulling apart of Star Wars. This is the podcast called Bad Science.
It's Star Wars, specifically Empire Strikes Back. You know, the second one. Well, technically it's episode 5, but you already knew that because you spent the last 38 years dissecting the Star Wars universe. Behold, nerds, I have tidings of glorious erudition. No longer must you suffer through online forums or your uncle's weird basement theories about Wampa ecology or the actual size of an exogorth, or why everyone's wearing a vest. There's so many vests. Why do you need a vest in space? Today we end this galactic conflict once and for all. Welcome to Bad Science.
Well, indeed. And more of that, right, Beck?
And I can't wait. Speaking of a callback to another show we recommended, I can't wait till they get to The Martian. Mm. I'm very excited to have them take that apart because it all looks so plausible.
And that was like a big selling point, was everyone said, like, ooh, the science is so sound behind this. That's
and exciting. Maybe it is. They haven't gotten there yet. Ooh. I don't know.
We've got some listeners weighing in on Twitter. Oh man, so many podcasts is what one of our readers said, naming NPR's Up First, which that's a good plug for us here at KCUR, but also Sawbones for hilarious but accurate medical history. I'm seeing nods around the table that's a good choice. And if you're politically oriented, and it sounds like this person might be politically oriented on the left, Pod Save America is another that they like. I want to ask each of you, maybe give us one more that's important to you, or that has made an impression on you, or that you just find fun and interesting. How about Cody?
Well, so I can't go on Central Standards Audiophiles without plugging something incredibly nerdy. So
yes.
I'm going to plug a podcast called Noclip, which is a video game documentary podcast. It's done by a guy named Danny O'Dwyer, who was formerly a games journalist. Now he does independent work and does a video series that's really, really great, doing documentary-style stories of the people behind video games, not actually talking about the games themselves very much, but talking about the process. And he just came out with a podcast version of it. Really, really great. And for a nerd like me, it fills a void, because most video game podcasts are just like a round table that's like 3 hours long, and I cannot listen to a 3 hour long podcast. I cannot do it.
So I asked earlier about whether something is accessible to the general public. This one is a little more focused on people who really are interested in that.
I would say you need a little bit of knowledge of video games before you get into it, but I don't think it's not so technical, and it really does try to focus on the humans behind it more than the actual video games themselves. So I think there's still something to get out of it. But yeah, you probably need a little bit of an interest in it first.
Madeline Fox, what's another on your list?
Well, to get back to the land of narrative podcasts, which is...
That's your thing.
A lot of podcasts. It is certainly my thing. Yeah, there's a great new one out of Oregon Public Broadcasting and Long Reads called Bundyville. And it goes into the Bundy standoff at the Malheur Wildlife Reserve. When was that? I think 2016. And some of the sort of ideology that drove the Bundys to get into these interesting spats with the government.
We've got a little clip from Bundyville. Let's take a listen.
We do, yeah.
Burns, Oregon is a rural sneeze-and-you'll-miss-it town in the remote southeastern part of the state. There's a grocery store, some restaurants, a motel or two. People who live there drive 2 hours to go to the mall, to Costco. Everybody knows everybody in Burns, and they notice when outsiders are in town. So when the Bundys appeared in late 2015, people took notice. They came because Ammon Bundy had taken an interest in a local ranching family.
The Hammonds are a wonderful people. They are salt of the earth.
He's talking about Dwight and Stephen Hammond, father and son ranchers who were convicted of setting fire to public lands in the early 2000s. Prosecutors tried to get them sent away for destroying government property, meaning the land, which carries a mandatory jail sentence of 5 years. But the judge said no. Combined, the Hammonds served 15 months. Prosecutors weren't happy. They appealed the ruling, and in January 2016, sent the Hammonds back to jail for the full 5 years. Hundreds of people in Burns were upset and held a march through town in support of the Hammonds. They saw the burn as an effort to protect their property from the wildfires that rage across the West each summer. The Fed said one of the fires was actually started to cover up an illegal deer hunt. Either way, Ammon Bundy saw a federal government persecuting a ranching family in order to take their land.
It's crucial that you understand what's going on here, what this issue is truly about. It's about our federal government taking over private properties adversely, or using the taxpayers' dollars after they ruined the ranchers to buy it.
It was part of a broader conspiracy, he said. Government run amok.
That's the podcast Bundyville, Madeline. It's something that feels like people have heard about anecdotally but have never really dug into.
Right, and I'm absolutely a sucker for any podcast that will take you deep into a headline. Embedded from NPR is another great example of that. Yeah. And it really sort of fleshes out the news stories that you heard and you maybe know something about, but this does a really good job of picking it apart and telling you how we got to there.
One of our guests here is Beckett Graham, who produces a nationally heard podcast, but one that they all are, I guess, if you want to. But lots of people listen to it. But it's produced right here in the Kansas City area.
Correct. I'm in Brookside.
Well, and so people are close to home. But Cody, you mentioned one other that is also produced here in the Kansas City area. What is the Chalkboard?
The Chalkboard podcast is two friends, Micah Conkling and Eric Milner. They interview cool people in Kansas City. It's one of the few Kansas City-based podcasts that I listen to besides the History Chicks.
State House Blend, Missouri.
State House Blend, right. Missouri.
No, understood.
Yeah. And a full disclaimer, our own Charlie Upchurch was on the Chalkboard podcast.
Yeah, yes, you are Charlie Upchurch.
But I don't listen to very many, like I said, I don't listen to many Kansas City podcasts, and this is one that I just kind of got into. They just talked with Andy Rieger of Jay Rieger and Company, which I thought was cool because I've drank some of their alcohol. And so I was like, oh, cool. It's cool to hear from this guy. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Cody acknowledging that he does occasionally drink alcohol. And one more podcast from you, Beckett. Give us your last best pick.
I love a podcast on a lighter note called Personal Best, where they take small problems. I mean, so small, you would just tell your friend to get over it. Small, for example, a woman just couldn't manage to send a good dating text, and they ended up hiring a method actress to impersonate her.
So, be your personal best by listening to Personal Best.
Correct.
That's Beckett Graham. She's one of the History Chicks, co-host and co-producer of that podcast and others, including The Recappery. We also were joined today by KCUR's Madeline Fox and KCUR's Cody Newell. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Me too.
And you can listen back to this audio file show this afternoon. We'll have it up online at kcur.org/centralstandard. All our other shows are there too, including our portrait session last Friday with local actor and writer and director and producer David Wayne Reed. Tomorrow, join us for a conversation about the song and the video This Is America. The show is produced by Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, and Coy Duggar. Today's edition was all about Anna Yakutenko and Kathleen Pointer, and I am grateful. I'm also Brian Ellison. Stay tuned for Up to Date coming up next.